Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is novelist A.D. Metcalf. She's a native New Yorker who came of age in the 1970s there, and we're talking about her new novel. It's book two of the Street series, Street Brotherhood, Rise of the Underground. Elisa, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you again about your writing.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
This, I don't want to say it surprised me, but now you're writing a series. I don't know if I was clear on that when we first talked about your first novel. When you wrote Street, did you intentionally write Street to go into a series?
Yes. Actually, when I first wrote the draft, it was probably somewhere close to like 300,000 words.
Wow!
Which was insanely, like, I didn't become a writer until much later in life, so I guess I had this backlog of stuff I needed to get out there. Of course, stupidly, I tried shopping it around, and everybody was just like, this is way too long. So I did have this story arc that went that long, but of course, it was never going to work as one book. So I wound up chopping it up into what's now two books, but there is a third book. I'm working on
it. Well, I was going to say, when I got to the end of this book, it was really obvious that it had to go into the third book.
Although, I mean, it could have ended there.
No. It's going into a third book. So that's really fascinating. Now, was Street your first novel?
Yes, it's my first novel.
Wow.
I wrote a children's book, under a different name for obvious reasons.
Okay, good.
I didn't think that the, this noir, gritty author of these very violent books should be associated with this cheerful little happy-go-lucky kid's book. But I'm honest about it. So, you can't really hide these day and age. You can have a pen name, but everybody knows who you are anyway.
That's right. That's exactly right. But still, these two novels really are the definition of gritty and urban. They're tough books.
Yeah, but I also, there are some spaces where it's supposed to be hopeful.
Yep.
And really funny.
I think that is even more true in Street Brotherhood. I found there's a lot of places where, and we'll talk about that in a little bit of a second. Your source material for this is that you grew up in the 70s in New York City.
I did.
For people who are not old enough, I am. I think people have no idea what New York City was like in the 70s.
Yeah, it was bad. It was borderline bankrupt.
Oh, yeah.
They were struggling with mass layoffs. It was dirty. Nobody was picking up the garbage. There was a lot of crime. But at the same time, it was turbulent, but also exciting and dangerous and sexy. And there was a lot of opportunity. Licit and illicit, and through that, rose up this really vibrant cultural scene, and there was a big resistance movement to what was going on. I remember as a little kid, my mother would drag me and my sister to these protest marches.
Oh, wow.
And tell us we were going to a parade.
Well, in a sense of the word, sure.
Right. Like, this is the most boring parade ever.
So this is the time of what I think was used to be called Alphabet City.
The Lower East Side was called Alphabet City, sure.
But that, when I didn't grow up, I grew up outside of Boston and then in Worcester, and I was certainly in Worcester by the 70s. The thing I associate with New York, it was also the rise of music, like the Ramones, came out of New York City at the time. So that plays into what you're talking about. Although it was a time of real grim happening, like the urban environment was just falling apart.
Right.
It was also the time of CBGBs. So.
Yeah, the Bronx was literally burning, and landlords were torching their buildings just to get away from the debt. It was a rough time. But it's just, you know, through those kind of, you know, in that kind of environment, creativity does rise up.
That's right.
And these, you know, outlaw, the street artists, you know, Basquiat and Al Diaz.
Yep.
Through who were in, you know, I was in that crowd.
Nice.
And I'm still friends with Al Diaz today.
Wow.
And he's still making great art.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it was these, what I try to portray in this book also is that these street kids are not who you think they are.
Right. Well, that's the first thing that becomes really clear, even with Johnny Alvarez. They have like one side of their personality, which is the part that most people would see on the street, but they have depths. And they have different kinds of interests. And I find that really, really interesting. I want you to describe the character of Johnny Alvarez.
Johnny. He's charismatic.
The subject of a million rock songs.
Right. He's every girl's bad boy,
that's exactly it.
Because, you know, he's broken and you want to fix him. Yeah, he's charismatic. He's cocky. He's really good at reading people,
mm-hmm.
Which helps him, you know, get an edge in this very adult world he's living in. But he's also battling a lot of demons from his past, his blood family.
Well, there's some really, I mean, he suffers from blackouts.
Yeah.
They're really eerie and crazy. And you keep filling in bits of his background in Florida, I believe, right? And
yep, in Miami.
It was a disaster. It was horrible.
Yes, but it does explain his ability to handle some of the stuff that's being thrown at him.
But he's not cognizant of what goes on during those blackouts.
No, it was a protective mechanism as a child. Sometimes when you do experience severe trauma, your brain protects itself by blacking out. But that now that he's older, some of the stuff that happened down there is starting to trickle in, and he's having a really hard time dealing with the reality of what actually happened to him.
I also like the reaction. He got to rub elbows with some upper crust people via a woman, a girl.
Sherry?
Yeah.
There
was a great dinner, or several great dinners. But
his girl. Oh, you're talking about his girlfriend, Jessica.
Yeah, Jessica. That's it. I'm bad at remembering names. But
right.
But there's some really amazing reactions of Johnny with these other people who have no idea what his life is like. And he's trying to sort of bluff his way through it up to a point.
He is. And in some senses, he's super smart. He speaks six languages.
Yeah.
Even though these kids are street kids, they still go to school. Johnny, partly out of necessity, because he's homeless. He needs meals. You know, they serve lunch in school. It's warm. They have the heat on. So, and he's good at learning. He likes to learn. And, you know, that becomes also a recruiting ground. The high school they go to is a recruiting ground for other gang members.
Now,
so that school, by the way, you know, you were talking about how the book relates to some of my own life and where I was, you know, where my inspiration sprouted from. That high school that they go to, I call it Roosevelt, which right. But it's actually a cross between IS-70, which is where I went to middle school, and the high school right across the street was Charles Evans Hughes, which was actually referred to by the Board of Ed as one of New York City's most troubled schools.
Oh, my God.
So, yes. So I kind of blended the two. I didn't go to Charles Evans Hughes, but I did go to IS-70, and those kids would come over and harass us younger kids. And I plucked some stuff from reality and then just let my imagination go wild with it.
I was going to ask you about that because there really is a sense of this is based on real stuff. I mean, there's a reality.
It is.
Yeah.
A lot of things. You know, I was harassed and smacked around by a neighborhood gang.
Wow.
Also, my friends of the family were drug dealers.
Lisa, how did you manage to transcend out of that?
I was going to say, there, not only were they drug dealers, they bought an apartment building on the Lower East Side with drug money.
Well, that sort of happens in the book.
Yeah, right. So it's not that far-fetched. I think people would read, especially like you said, people that are not familiar with New York City during that time period might think this is fantastical, but it really is not.
Well, I have to admit, because I didn't live in New York City at that time, when they got to that, and it becomes a really important space for these kids, that I was like, come on, this couldn't happen. This is going to be a really special case. Now you're telling me, yeah, it did happen.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen.
Good, I guess. Well, drugs and violence are such a part of these two books, and it's not gratuitous, and it's woven in and out of the story. But there are times when stuff happens that the reader gets shocked, that things suddenly take a turn.
Right.
For the.
But I also don't think it's unrealistic.
No.
Because there are some exaggerations here and there, but I tried not to make it fantastical. I really wanted to keep it very authentic and believable, at least for, you know, people that lived during that time.
There's two main gangs in the book, the Dogs of War, which, by the way, I love that name because I love that movie with what's his name?
Yeah. I didn't see that movie.
Oh, you should. You should.
I should. The gang is actually the time period for the gang. It's 1970s. The gang. This time period is before that movie came out.
The
Shakespeare.
Yeah, I was going to say. I forget who it was. Recognized the fact that the title came from a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, one of the older gangs. When he finds out what the Cesar from Dos Cruces, finds out that the Dogs of War. They call themselves the Dogs of War. He's like, ain't that some Shakespeare crap?
That's a brilliant comment, though. It shows you that these people have depths. Now, the rival gang, Dos Cruces, that's a tough gang.
That's a very tough gang. They're a lot older. They have a lot of numbers in that gang, and they are a lot more menacing.
Really? A lot more menacing. And all sorts of serious stuff happens. Now, let's talk about Jessica, because that's a big deal.
Jessica.
How would you describe Jessica?
Jessica.
Is that you in the novel? Oh boy, Elisa,
no.
Is it how you wish you were in that book?
No, okay. No. I would probably, all the characters have a part of me in them.
Okay.
I don't think I could really write them authentically if they didn't.
Including Johnny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know them. They are, a lot of characters are based on people that I actually knew in real life or amalgamations of that. They definitely are sparked from something real, something that I saw or, people that I knew even in passing. And I just let my mind go wild with their backstories.
Did you go?
Jessica is very, she's artistic, pretty self-assured. She comes from a home. Her parents are sheltered and very suspicious of other people. They're very suspicious of Johnny from the get-go because he looks like a street kid. And they make, the usual prejudicial assumptions about him.
Well, to me, when I read that stuff, it really showed that there were class issues going on at the time that really divided up people.
But she's really not.
But her parents are.
Well, I mean, I think they're pretending to be something they're not. They don't have a lot of money. They send her to this crap school that Johnny and the gang go to. So they don't have a lot of money, but I think they like to think they're better than, other people.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is novelist A.D. Metcalf. She's a native New Yorker who came of age in the 1970s, and we're talking about her new novel. It's book 2 of the Street series, Street Brotherhood, Rise of the Underground. Now, is this going to be a three-book series, or is it going to go on ad infinitum, like many book series end up doing?
That's going to depend. I mean, right now I have a plan that three, you know, I might stop at three. I have ideas to write other stuff as well.
I was going to ask you if you're going to branch out and do something different.
Yes, I have a whole outline for, you know, a literary fiction book that's completely detached from this that I'd like to try my hand at.
The problem is if you start to get a population of readers who are absolutely enthralled by your street series, it's really tempting to just write that series for the rest of your life.
It is. And I do have stories because it took me so long to start typing this manuscript but the story has been in my mind since I was very young. So I have scenarios for days. I mean, I have a lot of plot lines in my head, in, you know, my mind, the characters are all fully grown up. Well, you know, are they, or some of them?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I probably could scrape together enough material for more books. And certainly that would, you know, the market would have to drive that.
Have you started to talk, go to book talks and stuff?
I do, yes. Yes.
How's that? And the people have read your book?
So, no, well, this book just came out.
The first book.
The first book, yes. People read the first book. And also on Cape Cod, it's, you know, this is not, I don't know that this book is, they might be looking more about the beach and, you know, beach reads and stuff. And this is a little heavy for that. But I was in New York.
I know. Talk about antithetical places. New York City in the 1970s and Cape Cod today.
right.
That's a sort of, yeah, that's a distant match. Still, I think it would make it.
I'm not saying I don't have an audience out here.
No, you don't. That's really interesting. Now, I got to ask you about writing as a writer. Are you finding out that certain times of the days are the best times for you to write?
Oh, definitely. I have to write first thing in the morning. I get up very early. I have animals, ponies. I get up at the before dawn.
Wow.
And feed them. And then I sit down at my computer and I'm usually there until, you know, 10, 11-ish.
Wow. Do you write every day?
I write every day. I have to do something every day. Even if it's just editing one paragraph, I have to do something every day or I just don't feel complete.
Is that something new for you, though? Because you didn't write before the first novel, did you?
No, I didn't. I started like around 2012-ish or so. So
was this a new kind of discipline for you?
It is. I mean, I've been disciplined in other senses, mm-hmm. Having animals and horses and managing horse farms.
Wow.
That requires a lot of discipline. And, you know, in my other work, various jobs. So I think the discipline was there. And also the propensity for detaching. I said at some talk that when, you know, you spend all day detached from reality, listening to voices in your head, they tend to call you a mental patient. But if you write a book, they call you an author. All I'm doing is kind of concentrating this propensity for, you know, escapism. And channeling it and actually writing it down, and it's socially acceptable now.
Did you diagram the whole story arc before you started? Like, did you have a whole sort of summation and then the beginning, middle, and end?
No, I'm not a plotter.
Okay.
They call
it. Yep.
The plotters and the pantsers. But I did have the end. So I was writing toward the end of the second book, you know, when it was all, when book one and two were all one book, I knew where I was going with this particular series. But sometimes the characters kind of take you in a different direction. And then through editing, things weren't working, things were dragging on, so you wound up redirecting. Yeah, there was a lot of.
I think they call probably, would like, I think they call the seat of the pants writing, that
yeah.
that you sort of start out and see where it takes you instead of having plotted yeah. it all out exact. So could the series go places where you don't even have any idea where it is yet?
It could. I'm not really sure where the third book's going. I have a clear idea of things that need to be in it.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure entirely where it's going. Where in, like, you know, books one and two, I always had an end that I was writing toward.
Okay.
And I think that's important, is to know where you're going, but to be open to the detours.
One of the things that's really nice in your books, really good, is believable dialogue. How easy was that for you to write dialogue?
That's funny you should ask that. Writing the dialogue is the easiest part.
No, come on.
It is. I hear it in my head. I grew up listening to people talk like this. This is, you know, even just sitting on the subway, listening to people have a conversation. And I've always been a people watcher, listening to conversations, watching, you know, people go by. And
do you ever take notes while you're watching people?
No.
Okay.
No, this is all.
That would be weird.
It would be weird. But that, I guess that, you know, that street slang and the cadence of the dialogue.
Yeah.
It's so, like, ingrained in me, even though I don't talk like that. But sometimes when I go back to New York and I start talking to my friends, you know, that comes out, and that kind of, like.
Did you have a New York accent?
I never really had a New York accent. My mother did talk like. You know, she grew up in the Bronx and Upper Manhattan, and she talked like that. But my father was British.
Nice.
And we summered on Cape Cod, so I think I got a blend of different things.
Now, when you go back to New York, do you go in specifically to pick up some details about location? Because that's the other thing that impresses me about these two books, is that you have such a clear idea of place in this book.
Yeah.
The reader can really imagine the area.
I'm really glad that came through, because those are real places for me. Maybe not exactly, like, that building might not be exactly in the place where I put it in the, you know, in the story.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the sense of place. Not necessarily the exact building, but the sense, like, you feel the location in these two novels.
Oh, great.
So the janitor's closet doesn't exist?
Not that I knew of.
Oh! I'm sure.
But that was a fun twist.
The other thing is, and you write love scenes and sex scenes and that. Is that hard? I could never do it. I can't do it. I could never do it.
No, that part wasn't hard either.
Huh.
I really enjoyed writing. I want to write an erotica novel as well, because I do enjoy writing the sex scenes and the intimacy. It's not just about the sex.
Right. Yeah.
I really like that. That was a lot of fun.
Well, it's not, and it's not, it's detailed up to a point.
Yeah.
And you really realize that. So it's capturing the eroticism of it, but not the graphic necessarily. Well, there's graphic.
Also partly thanks to my writing group, one person in my writing group in particular, Harris, shout out to you, who in the editing process, when we were sharing materials and everything, he's like, yeah, you might want to tone that down. And I was like, yeah, that's right. You know, they are just like, you know, 16, 17-year-old kids. I probably need to do that. But on the other hand, you know, in growing up in the city at that age.
That's right.
You were a lot older. You know,
sexually.
Yes, sexually, yeah. But also socially. There was a lot of intermingling with adults. People were just a lot more mature.
We're almost completely out of time, and I just want to ask you about two characters. One is Marco. We're not going to have time to do the reading, unfortunately.
That's fine.
Marco scared me.
Yeah, Marco scares me too.
Don't give away about why. Don't give away that point. But that actually surprised me. And there's a character that I've really enjoyed, Brick.
The Brick, yes. The Brick had a much bigger role in the first book.
Yeah, yeah.
I did miss him in this book a bit. He starts to take a step back as Johnny becomes more and more involved in the underworld.
And he also gets sick.
Yes, he gets sick, right. I love the Brick. And I know that guy. Like, I don't know that guy, but I know that guy.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I felt like I knew that guy too. It's really interesting. Yeah, so when can we expect now that you've led us to this point in the second book, when's the third book coming out?
Well, let's see.
Oh, no.
I can write. I just, I was so busy.
Well, we got to stop there. I thought there was going to be a definite answer, but there wasn't. My returning guest tonight is novelist A.D. Metcalf. She's a native New Yorker who came of age in the 1970s, and that informs book two of the Street series, Street Brotherhood, Rise of the Underground. Alisa, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. Pleasure talking to you, too.
You listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.